Okay, I think we can probably start. So I'm Bruce Vincent, and my role is to chair the session, but most particularly make sure we finish on time or slightly early, given the time of the day. So this is the group insurance study, and the two speakers are Jeff McRae and Revshin Tam. Now, I'll just go through their little bios here. So Jeff joined Rice Water in 2001 after more than 35 years of super experience. So I'll just pause there and just think about that. including 12 years as principal of Mercer with a focus on super and group insurance. And Jeff's work at Rice Warner includes all aspects of group insurance and super. I know Jeff personally from my days at Mercer. He's done a lot more than that, but we won't go into that right now. And Revshin Tam is a pricing actuary at Pacific Life Re Australia. Works with some of the people in this room. Responsible for pricing protection business in Australia. He's had 10 years experience in the life insurance industry, focusing on reinsurance pricing for individual and group protection business across Australia, New Zealand, Asia Pacific region and North America. And prior to joining Pacific Life Re, Rev held the role of regional pricing actuary with another reinsurer. And of course both Jeff and Rev are fellows of the Institute. So we'll start with a presentation from Jeff and followed by Rev, and then we'll have some questions, hopefully.
Well, good afternoon, and thanks for coming along. This is obviously, the study was a very big piece of work, and it required a team of people to work on it, and we're very lucky that Pacific Life Re did provide us with some well-equipped people to help in Rev, Betty and Francis, and we had a team of two younger actuaries in Raymond and Arno, and then Jenny, and I had to get our hands dirty from time to time too, and we really welcomed the involvement of the Pacific Life Re people, because sometimes when you're doing a study like this by yourselves and you're analysing things and you're coming up with conclusions, it's more difficult to question your own conclusions than if you have some other people who are also very involved with it to bounce those ideas off. And we really appreciate that, and I think it improved the quality of the total outcome. Before we started, we obviously came up with some ideas of what we thought we knew and that we could test during the study. We thought the underlying rates may be similar to retail business. Industry funds and public sector funds were similar, and IP termination rates are similar regardless of claim notification delay. We knew there were things affecting those termination rates, and each group scheme is too different to compare, and so the experience, the individual funds and their circumstances, and the membership, very important. What we're going to cover here quickly is that is the largest study. We carried it out because there hadn't been one carried out on Australian group experience before, but we did have some restrictions that we'll cover off later. Important thing was data, that the funds didn't want anyone to be able to identify their data, and some of the benefit designs were such that if we'd segmented the results to what some people would consider as a reasonable degree, you'd be able to see straight away some funds that were influencing that experience. And so to preserve the privacy of the funds, we did the data cleansing, or a significant amount of the data cleansing, and presented the data in cubes to Pacific Life Free, and so they couldn't identify which funds were included. We had about 45% of the exposed lives in the study. We would like to improve that next time. It took a lot of hard work getting funds to contribute data in the first instance, and we're hoping next time it'll be easier when they can see that there's no pain resulting from it. And obviously the more funds we have participating, the better will be the quality at the end of the day. This is the largest study, well, the only attempt at a comprehensive study in the Australian group life market. We had over 5,000 insured lives each year and over 140,000 claims. We focused on the years 2010 to 2013, but we did have claims going back for a lot longer period than that, so we could look at the claims development over a lot longer period. And as I said, fund anonymity was preserved as a priority, and we would have struggled to get any data if we hadn't been able to give that undertaking. And as I said before, this is significant time and effort required initially to clean up and understand the data. Some data that we were originally provided with, we couldn't get to a satisfactory standard, and we had to leave that out of the study. It wasn't a huge amount, but we would have been over 50% if we hadn't had to exclude some data. There was a need to understand the group market better, and I'm sure the very significant volatility in recent years has underlined that more. And so it was necessary to investigate, see what the drivers were. There's still a need to look very closely at individual funds and to try to understand what's driving the experience there, but it's good to have a background of what you're expecting on an industry-wide basis. So we have seen, in response to that volatility, large increases in premiums in conjunction with the review and tightening of insurance terms and conditions. Is it enough? Certainly we're getting some good profitability figures coming through, at least on death and TPD, and Francis has told us the problems about reserving for IP. But there is an increased need and focus on understanding group insurances. But the tables that we have come up with, as I said, are a first step, and we are hoping, as we'll allude to later, to develop them further with more data. The data we got was not nearly as comprehensive as we would have liked. The biggest problem was no recording of member number and claim data, so you couldn't refer to the member data to get more details on the claims. But we have been able to set up some relevant and credible industry tables and statistics covering death, TPD and IP, for IP both on incidents and termination. And we're able to look separately at industry funds, master trusts and public sector, and certain elements of the experience are very different across those three sectors. We looked at identification of key drivers and the extent and duration of the impacts of those, and certainly we hope to produce some replacement tables that are more relevant for your use. But I'll now hand over to Rev, and he'll take you into the nuts and bolts.
Thanks, Rev.
Hi, I'll be up here to tell you a bit more about the process methodology, some of the hurdles and constraints that we had, then also share with you some of the key insights and try and tell you how this affects the people in this room. So first of all, once again, thank and acknowledge the work and the help of Arno, Raymond, Jenny, and also my colleague Betty, and of course Francis as well. Just want to touch on the amount of data we're getting out of this. So we mentioned 43% of all group insured lives. It's massive. We've had a few topics at this forum about the need for data and how that feeds into as a critical path for the data analytics. And really, this is one source where we have a lot of information. Secondly, I want to point out that one of the major pain points where we spent a lot of time, a lot of effort, was to clean and standardize and also make the data anonymous. Honestly, after that, doing the decline rate analysis, the sort of the delay patterns, the graduation, setting up the tables was a much more straightforward task. So I'll try and focus on the key points just to make sure everyone can get out of here on time. So on the available factors, pretty straightforward on incident side, looking at age, gender, also split by type of funds. So that's one of the key things we're getting out of this report, differences between industry fund, a master trust, and a public sector fund. On the termination side, IP termination, a bit more interesting. So those of you who were just here for the previous talk would know that notification delay has a big influence on long-term termination factors now. We also did a bit of grouping on the age bands and waiting periods just to make sure the data was kept anonymous and a bit more significant. Now, finally, the frustrating part was just the standard of information and captured data that we were getting from the various funds. Because we needed to keep the data standardized, anonymous, we were pretty much reduced to the lowest common denominator, which meant that a lot of useful information had to be excluded or tossed out. And it's equally frustrating when you think about, we get a lot of requests, I think, in our day-to-day lives from funds, insurers, reinsurers, asking specific questions. We don't want to know, is there some anti-selection in this scheme? What's the occupation mix? Some funds are starting to capture this, but it's not consistent, and hopefully we can do a better job going forward. So, for example, if you wanted to know if there's anti-selection, knowing things like the policy in-force duration would give us an idea. Also, if we could match up claims across various funds, so if someone is starting up membership or having insurance cover across various funds and claiming at the same time, that can sort of give us some indications. And finally, useful things like policyholder location, like a simple postcode or state even, and salary information will be quite useful as well. So just a really quick recap and an example of how we use this data. Just a quick takeaway, we now are sort of exploring that, and I guess we're proposing that different termination factors differ quite greatly by notification delay. And this is very apparent on long-term GSE. And really, this analysis is only, we're going to do this because of consistent and credible large set of data, which was available based on this Rice Warner study. Just quickly move on. Okay, some of the insights now, maybe the interesting stuff. Unfortunately, on death, nothing too surprising, I'd say. We did have a look at the claim causes, and what we did see, and what might be quite relevant, is looking at the terminal illness. So we see a lot of the terminal illness claims are related to cancer causes, and this will have it's good to have this in the back of your mind when you sort of see the industry moving towards from a 12 to 24 month TI definition as well. Moving on to TPD. I guess everyone's quite aware that TPD delays are a factor of both awareness of cover, but also the claim condition. What we did see, one of the things we saw, I'd say, is that the occupation risk class does have a significant impact on the delay. And finally, I just want to point out that we can see that public sector funds seem to actually have the shortest delay, which was honestly a bit of a surprise to us as well. Moving forward to claim cause split, just going to point out one quick one here is mental illness-related or stress-related claims have been of interest, I'd say, to the industry in recent years. And we can see there is sort of the pattern across ages. And you sort of see that spike in the ages 30 to 34. I'd like to declare that's my age band, so hopefully don't get too stressed. And moving on to IP. Once again, I think we've said this point enough, but we noticed that the termination rates are dependent or related heavily to the notification delays. Similarly, here we see there's actually shorter notification periods for the public sector funds. And then, once again, if you look at mental illness and stress-related claims on the orange line, you see the sort of peak around the age 30-34. Okay. So what do we now have? There are distinct incidence rates now from this study for group death, group TPD, group GSC, and also termination rates for the GSC. How is that useful? So I think, for starters, it is now available as a benchmarking. Unfortunately, once again, the fact that we weren't able to capture occupation in the data, especially on the membership side, I think the data is quite good on the claim side, but on the membership side, it was quite lacking. It makes it a little bit hard, right, to compare and really identify certain types of funds. But what we do see is the shape, and it can give you very interesting insights. So just top of my head, when you compare to, say, the retail rates, you see quite a different shape on the group business. And why is this useful? Well, we often argue that when you have a large industry fund with, say, 500,000 members, 10,000 claims, it's fully credible. We don't need any additional information. We can price off its own experience. And I think that's kind of the market view to date. But there will be changes throughout that scheme's history. Or they could be looking to make some new product changes to bring it possibly in line with the market or to follow some new trends. Now, when you cannot compare or you don't know how to compare to the rest of the market, it's really hard to see whether a past product change has completely flowed through, what the real impact is, and how you might be able to allow for any future changes. And I think having this sort of industry table does definitely help you in that regard. And personally, I believe, or have seen it being used in that way. Finally, in comparison to existing practices, I don't think I have to talk too much about the flaws of the IED 8993. But even now, we do have updated retail tables, such as FSC and ADI. But there is a profound difference between group and retail. I mentioned before the shape differences. Looking just, say, at the mortality rates, you're seeing, I'd say, from memory, it was slightly lower at the younger ages, but sort of increasing quite much higher for the group rates at the older ages. And I find it strange to use retail TPD rates to then compare to group when most of the exposure in the Australian market, most of the experience is actually on the group side. So for the next steps, I'll hand back to Jeff.
Thanks, Rev. As I said before, we would like to extend the study and we would like to get more funds data, but we would like to get more comprehensive data. And we have been talking to funds that did participate and funds who haven't participated, and certainly with a little bit of help from SPS 250 that some funds are recording more comprehensive data now. It's certainly not uniform across the industry, and a lot of funds are relying on insurers to hold the claims data, and the comprehensiveness of that data also varies significantly across the industry, and whether we as a profession should be taking that on board and developing what we feel is a good standard set of claims data to maintain for what's has proved itself to be a very volatile part, as part of our total business portfolio, that obviously there are a number of parties involved here, the trustee office, the administrators, but we should be able to improve the data, and we're hoping to improve the data and therefore make the future experience more relevant. For funds that have contributed data, we have provided them with more feedback than has been generally available, because the first question we're often asked is by funds when we approach them, what's in it for us, in that they felt that it wasn't worth their while contributing unless there was something in it for them. And we have done a sweetener for a number of funds in actually contrasting their experience with that of the total study, and we're certainly happy to do that for other funds in the future who didn't participate in this study. But the next steps are certainly getting more data, then being able to get more insights from the data, and dependent on the quality of that data and the comprehensiveness of it, we'd certainly like to look at default versus additional cover. In some large funds that I've looked at, certainly there is clear evidence of anti-selection on the additional cover, but that is variable between funds, but certainly be worthwhile looking at. Occupation factors, it may take us a few more years to get appropriate data there, but we're certainly working on that. Salary and some assured sizes, we may struggle on that, but we're working with funds using where salary isn't recorded, which is the case for a lot of industry funds, an indication of that, possibly the SG contribution for members during the year, and then various other data of contributions paid, so that we can convert it with some degree of accuracy to a salary. In force duration, once again, looking for anti-selection for people that have been in funds for a short period. Postcode is those who attended the AAIA actuaries presentation this morning. They were able to show how important postcode is in claims, and it was something that we sought to include in our study, but it was too hard. And then the identifying unique lives where some members are members in multiple funds, but that is going to be a challenge also. But it was a big challenge finishing the first study, and we really appreciate the help we got, and we're hoping to do better next time.
So we've got plenty of time for questions, comments, observations. So form an orderly queue. So please do go to the microphone and state your name, and I'm sure we can open up some interesting discussion.
Adam Fusco. Thanks for the presentation, and well done on all the work that you guys have done. It's adding a lot of value, so great, great job. I've got a couple of questions. One, you've mentioned there that there's going to be regular maintenance of that data. What do you think that is? How often are you going to be producing that? Another, a comment around future developments. It would be really fascinating to start collecting contributions and account balance from funds as well, and the insights that that could actually start to provide in terms of the comprehensiveness of, you know, creating real member needs insurance based on those. I think that'd be a step in the future. It might take a little while to get the funds comfortable with that. And thirdly, is in the analysis that you did around claims delays, I was curious as to whether you did any analysis by claim cause, and whether that was something that came out as well. Thanks.
As I said very early on, it was a major project. It took a lot of time and a lot of effort, and certainly feature very strongly in our profits for the period that we were carrying it out. We would like to keep going, and we are planning stage at the moment, so we would hope to do a further study in the foreseeable future, but I can't at this stage with the undertaking that will be this year, but certainly we are planning. Certainly we would like to get some contribution and account balances for members. Whenever you ask trustees for additional data, there is real concern these days with privacy, and I think most funds are now comfortable with giving contribution data, SG contribution data, on a no-names basis. Have asked a couple of funds putting a toe in the water about account balances, and they seem more reluctant there. I don't necessarily follow the logic, but push back, but we will take that further. On the question on claims delay, I might pass over to Rev.
Thanks for the question, Adam. Just to touch on the point about account balances, I think out of the 16 schemes that we looked at for the study, there was only two where we did have access to that information, and I think it was more by coincidence than they purposely provided that. So it is hard to get that information. So regarding the claims delay, the claims delay by cause, we did actually have a look at this, and it was quite interesting because I was sitting in another talk earlier today talking about the statistics and GLMs, and a lot of the study information that we saw on the types of claims that did have early notification, so tying very closely to that as well. So, namely, first of all, looking at older ages, they actually have shorter claim notification, but also, say, cancer claims, you get some early notification, whereas your musculoskeletal tend to have that longer delay, but also it could be related to the occupations.
Just before the next question, I'd just make a quick observation on what I've seen outside of this study, that being that other features can affect claim notification too. And if you look at a predominantly advisor-driven master trust compared with an industry fund, you'll see that differences are greater in different places, such as in that in the industry-driven master trusts, you'll see you get more large claims in the first 12 months with advisors looking after the big dollars, and so it can be a reserving and pricing challenge.
Uh,
Murray Glaze, Munich Re. I'd also like to ask a couple of questions. There's going to be a lot of double barrels here. Firstly, there seems to have been quite significant change in claims incidence rates and reporting delays over the last 5 or 6 years, maybe a bit longer. How have you allowed for that in your study? Is there some type of base point against which we can compare there? And secondly, how would you envisage practitioners using the table in light of the fact that you haven't rated by occupation, cover levels, or even different schemes where we know that there are substantial differences? And maybe if I could add in a third question. There was a very interesting set of points that you thought you knew, and which I think we all thought we knew in the first part of the presentation. Could you maybe discuss briefly how your insights might have changed as a result of doing the study?
So for the first point about the incidence and reporting delays, make sure I understand your question correctly. It was how it's varied over recent times. So just to point out again, the study focused on the 3-year period between 2013 and 2015. So unfortunately, with the exposure data that we had, we weren't able to sort of look at the long term. We were able to sort of see some of the claims which did show the change in delay notification. At a very high level, I'd say that there is, I think everyone would agree that there is a spike in recent years, but whether that is bring forward of claims or whether it's a long-term increase, it's too early to say and too early to see, even with this amount of data available, because we need it to run out.
Well, the other thing would be that there appears to be greater variability year on year with death claims than TPD or IP, and we have had 2 years, one of which was covered in this study and another one since, where there's been a spike of death claims, which is of interest and certainly seems to be looked at differently by different actuaries and pricing.
So I think it's a fair point that it is hard to use these rates since they have an aggregate occupation, and we know there are differences between schemes. Part of it is that we do want to get this information going forward. It was something that we could see signs of, but obviously couldn't share due to the ability to identify certain funds for their particular characteristics or their types of cover. What I do think is useful is really the shape. So generally, I think that the assumption is that your occupation factors would be on a roughly fairly flat across ages, the impact, when you're looking at TBD influences, given maybe excluding some of the tails. But the overall shape does give you some very good insights on especially how a scheme you're looking at and using, a scheme that you're pricing or looking in more detail and comparing to this basis, you can sort of see whether there's certain spikes, certain irregularities, and we hope you have a better understanding on the types of exposure that the scheme has or potential areas where you're being anti-selected with that scheme as well. So for the third question about what we now know, what we thought we knew and how that's changed. So hopefully it's quite apparent to people in this room that retail business is very different from group business. And simply taking the retail rates and making some quasi-adjustment for the difference in awareness of cover, I don't think makes a cut. We can see from the shape of the rates is quite different, so it's not just a flat adjustment or difference between retail and group. In terms of the next point, industry funds and public sectors, I think in the past might have been grouped together. But what I sort of pointed out in some of my slides was especially the difference in the notification delay, with public sector funds actually having a much quicker delay, or much shorter delay, quicker notification. and how that influenced things such as termination rates on IP, but also your overall experience in terms of tails as well. I think we've touched on IP point a few times, the notification delay. And finally, I think this actually ties into your second question, that each group scheme is too different. There's no point in using this comparison. Having an aggregate set of rates is not that useful. And once again, I would implore to use that benchmarking exercise. It might not tell you everything about the fund or everything about the differences, but I do believe it will show you some useful insights.
I won't add anything more on that last point, but going back to the claims incidents and reporting delays. Reporting delays are changing, insurer processes are changing, trustees are accepting improved processes. Hopefully the delays will reduce significantly from where they are, and this study or others like it will have to be updated regularly, and we will be looking with interest at how the shapes and the tables change.
Next question, Charles.
Charles from Common Shore here. I got two questions. The first one is, Rev, you mentioned that the notification pattern is fairly different between public sector funds and your industry funds. Is there any reason in your analysis or anything you've covered that might explain that difference? My second question is, comparing those these newly developed set of rights to some of our more long-standing corporate rights, I know there's some fairly dramatic differences at the older ages. So I was wondering, were the results at the older ages deemed credible enough? That's it. Thanks.
I'll probably answer the first question. I think one thing to bear in mind is, once again, the mix of funds. So we do have a large set of data, a lot of lives and a lot of different schemes. So 16 total and what was the number of lives? 5 million plus lives. What could be impacting the difference is still the occupation mix. So one of the other highlights was that when you have heavier risks, heavier occupations, they seem to have longer delays. So I definitely attribute some of that difference between industry funds and public sector funds to the different occupation mix as well. Unfortunately, it is hard without all those different parts. We sort of had these suspicions. We're able to test some of them, unable to share really the finer details. But it's hard to say on a broad stroke without having things like occupation or having duration what the exact picture is. And then on your second point, just the difference between corporate rates. Once again, with the large data set, we did actually have a significant number of lives at those older ages. But what I'd suggest is maybe you're getting a very different type of membership between your corporates and your industry funds, especially at those older age.
Something on the public sector versus industry funds, what we've seen, and also looking over the years at some experience with very large corporate funds, that reporting seems to be strongly influenced by the strength of the HR function within those, where there's a strong, well-controlled HR function. HR people are looking after their staff, not just when they're in employment, but when they're eligible to claim. And you do see a lot faster reporting there. In industry funds, there's a lot wider gap between HR and super, because a lot of HR people look as industry funds as final outsourcing. They're so far away from it now. The fund will look after them. And, that's certainly not the only influence, but I'm sure that it does contribute to the final result. And I can't add
More questions, comments?
Sorry, Jun from Hanover. Somewhere in the presentation you mentioned that you were able to identify members in multiple funds from membership and birth claims. Is there any statistics or interesting findings coming out of that? And following on from that, if we improve the data in terms of contributions and members' account balance going forward, do you have any ideas on any practical ways to manage that single peak risk?
All right, first, just to clarify the first question, it's something that we'd like to have. So we weren't able to identify or have a unique identifier across funds to identify, say, one person claiming on multiple benefits.
We did find some duplicates, but we didn't have enough detail to be able to do a proper search through the data, and that was one of the areas where I said we would try to improve in the future, but it is going to be challenging. Certainly with contribution and account balance data, and hopefully postcode, we will be able to subdivide the experience more than we have this time, but it will require support from the funds and their administrators. In a lot of cases, the administrators are holding a lot more data because of downloads with contributions from payroll systems, but they're not holding it for everyone, and there's a reluctance in a number of them from releasing incomplete data. But if you get access even to the incomplete data that covered 60 or 70% of their members, it would be a good start, and we're working on that.
Just add to that, I think what we might see from account balances and also contributions is, well, for contributions, it could be used as a proxy for certain affluence or maybe an occupation. And it sort of allows additional analysis, whether by factors, by GLMs. And then in terms of the account balance, I think what I think would be a useful insight is comparing cover versus account balances to see just the amount of incentive in there for people to keep a close eye on their claims and eligibilities.
Any more questions or comments or anything? Yes, here we go. Adam again.
Adam Fusker again. Just another thought which occurred to me around future developments. We talk about changes in claims processes and administration practices and the impact that that can have. Do you know what would be really good is if we could actually try and capture that somehow? And that might be something that the funds are actually interested in terms of the impacts of different insurers and how well they can manage it. That might be something like a little carrot for the funds as well, that if they can get some information out of this as a benchmark to help keep their insurers honest.
Any further questions? I'll just ask a question which I prepared earlier. So obviously it's a great study, and there's various implications coming out of it. And so can we perhaps just reflect for a moment on what that means for product design, introducing new benefits? What are the immediate thoughts that come to mind as you go through the study?
Sure. I think sort of touched on this before. It's when you're looking at individual schemes, and if you possibly compare it to a benchmark across the market, you can see how that scheme compares to, say, a mix or an average of the experience we're seeing. Ignoring the actual magnitude, because that could be affected by occupations. If you look at the shape, you might be able to identify particular pockets of concern, let's say, or areas where you could probably focus a bit more on product changes or process changes, just to improve the risk, reduce the claims, and hence reduce the premiums for members as well. So I think that for me would be a key focus.
Any short final questions or comments or burning things? No. Well, it's just a hand. Can I please ask you to fill out the feedback forms either in paper or online? And so it just now remains for me to ask you to join me in thanking Rev and Jeff.